Welcome to The Talk. I'm Dave Keenest.
Before the ayahuasca, before the clear blue skies, and before the great awakening, there were demons disguised as angels.
All right, welcome back to another version of The Talk. I'm Dave Keenest, formerly Addiction and Redemption, formerly kind of Fascinating Talks, working with integration of all of the various elements into one cohesive whole. And we've got a really amazing man here on the talk today by the name of Kyle Feroli. And Kyle studies the brain. So he does brain mapping. And I'm gonna read a little bit of his bio. But it says here, he starts off by quoting a guy by the name of Dr. Daniel Amen. And what this man says is the brain is the only organ that we don't look at before we treat it. And I found that to be fascinating. And it is this singular idea that has prompted Kyle S. Feroli to spend all his working hours pursuing the reasons why people struggle with their thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. In his own words, Mr. Feroli spent a lifetime trying to uncover why some people are just stuck. But Kyle's real passion is showing people how one's brain health can alter and determine the bigger picture, how they think, act, and feel. This in turn allows many people the chance to understand the root cause behind their struggles and symptoms. So I like that root causes thing. So thanks for being here today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
How's your day and how's Wisconsin?
Wisconsin today is sunny and nice. And I think we're getting snow in a few days. So just going to enjoy what we have and wait for Mother Nature to trick us again.
Welcome to almost May in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Yeah, I was telling people I didn't move from Chicago to California because of the winter. I moved because of the spring.
You never know what you're going to get here.
You never know what you're going to get. So, again, welcome and thanks for all the work that you do. I'm going to ask the fascinating talks question. So what fascinates you about yourself?
About myself, I think it's a blessing and a curse in that I don't believe that we ever become experts at anything. I think the more that we learn, the more we know we don't know. And what fascinates me about myself is that I've been lucky enough to find this field and not have it just be a hobby or a passion or a quest, but something that is going to make the world a better place, help other people, and at the same time, give me something to do that I really enjoy and feel like I have a calling.
And what is the curse in discovering what you're meant to do?
Well, you know, I started off as a mental health therapist thinking that I could save the world by talking to people. And I still believe that mental health therapy is a very important part. But after a client of mine took his life at 15, I realized there must be something else than just talking to people. And I started studying the brain. I started studying the body and learning about the nervous system. And the problem with just talking to people is when you ask them to reinvent their problem in their mind or recall their problem, maybe is a better term, they actually go into a fear mode. Their bodies change, their brains change, and then you're asking them to try and make positive growth and change in a therapist's office when stress can be created from an external event like a bear chasing us or, you know, living through in your head again the bear chasing you 10 years ago, or a rape, or a traumatic event, or a war. And I don't think that there's enough credit being given to people that are truly struggling with brain health concerns, because our societies, it's all in your head. Take a pill. And when you go to the doctor, like Daniel Amen says, they don't look at the brain. If there's something wrong with your arm, they'll take an x-ray. If your eyes don't work, they'll do a scan. If your heart doesn't work, they'll do an EKG. But if it's with the brain, you're fine. It's just in your head.
And so describe, like, if you were to take an important organ like the heart and compare its complexity with the brain, which would be more complex and why?
Well, I'm going to cheat and use Dr. Sapolsky's quote from his book that the brain is just a dumb pump. And the, you know, connections are the hoses are no different than hoses bought at Sears.
Wait, the heart, not the brain, right? The heart is the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. The heart. Okay. Like, wait a minute. This question's going wrong.
Yeah. And, you know, there's different things that trigger it. And if you put too much pressure to that heart, it's going to break down.
Right.
So, and I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't, you know, say if there's more complexity to that. But I know in our field, in psychophysiology, which is a combination of mind, body, and brain science, we can measure heart rate, and does it vary when we inhale and exhale? And that's a good sign if there's variability there. It's called heart rate variability training. So it's not that it's maybe not as complex as the brain. I don't think we're ever going to figure the whole brain out. Right. There are many different types of testing that can be done on the brain, but they're not being done when it comes to emotional or behavioral concerns. If there is a seizure or a sleep concern, they do EEGs on those things. But if it's a mental health thing, as Daniel Amen's found, 7 different patterns of ADD. The meds only work for a few of them. And there's 7 different patterns of anxiety and depression. So you're pretty much playing the guessing game if you don't look at the brain first. And there's several ways to look at the brain.
Yeah, describe one. Or describe your way, rather.
My way was actually something that I learned about from Amen a long time ago, and that is the EEG, the electroencephalograph. It is a way of putting a cap or leads on the head and measuring the cortical activity of the brain, which is the outer layer of the brain. And every time that the neuron fires to another neuron, it creates a little discharge, if you will. And you can measure how many of those discharges revolutions happen. So if the neurons are firing 10 times a second under that sensor, that's a 10 hertz wave, which is called alpha. And if they're only firing 5 to 8 times, that's a theta wave. That's something that someone has if they're very creative or they're kind of ADD-like. But then if it's firing 15 or 20 times, that's a beta wave. So the EEG is a diagnostic tool that can be used medically and clinically to look at emotions and behavior, as well as obviously the raw EEG morphology that medical doctors look at to make sure that there isn't a problem with a transient or a spike or an epileptic wave or something like that. So that the medical world starts off with the EEG, but then after they are deemed healthy, they kind of set it aside. And us clinicians step in at that point and say, thank you for doing that. This is awesome. We support what you're doing. Do you mind if we take it another step and say, of those healthy waves, do you have too many of those healthy waves in the front of your brain causing you to have ADD-like symptoms? Do you have too many of those beta waves along the midline on the top of your head causing you to be compulsive or a perfectionist? Do you have things in the back of your head maybe not running right that could be leading to, having trouble with seeing or reading?
So is epilepsy like just a disturbance in brain waves essentially, or is there a relationship with like a chemical firing, or what would that be?
Well, there's so many different diagnoses of brain conditions, and because it's a medical thing, I'm not really able to comment on that. But what we have seen is that in some patterns, there is a slowing. So if your brain should be driving 65 or 70 miles an hour down the freeway, and at these particular places, usually at the temporal parietal junction, it might be only going at 30 or 40 miles an hour. If we turn that to brain waves, it might be stuck in a very slow pattern that is not processing things properly and kind of like offline in a way. And I'm not an expert in that area, but we have worked with several clients with other doctors that have seen dramatic improvements in that area.
So does a person have, like you mentioned the waves, and I've heard it said that Buddhist monks have very high theta waves, I believe, like their brains move very slowly.
Yes, it might be alpha, it might be theta, depending. I think the studies were more of the alpha waves, which are about 10 hertz, 8 to 12 hertz. But there are some studies, too, that people are going into more theta. Theta is more of a creative, visualizing, daydreaming, inner mind state. Alpha is in the moment, present.
Got it. Okay.
So I might think have been it confused might be now. That, but I just saw a study today before we got on that I was killing a few minutes, and it said that kids don't have to worry about screen time before bed. And yet the rage has been, no, it's horrible. So you may have read something that I haven't seen, and that's totally possible because I don't scour it hourly. But I think that there's a combination. It's called FALFA, and it's when the theta and alpha are kind of in there. The other thing it might be is depending on who's using the measuring stick. Some people feel that, theta starts at 4 to 8. Some people say it's a little bit lower, a little bit higher. Some people say alpha only goes to 12 hertz. Some people say alpha is a pattern and a shape, a sinusoidal pattern of symmetry. And if you see this perfectly shaped wave at 13 hertz, it's still alpha. It's not a beta wave. So, there's a lot of discrepancies I've noticed in the past several years I've been studying it, that some people say potato, potato, but really you have to look at the frequency of the wave and what it's doing in the brain.
So if I mean, I'm definitely a very, very ADD person, and it, that problem is very, and I just think back to the 90s, you know what I mean? When like I drove, when I had tapes in my car, like, you know, just tapes that you have to put in the tape player.
Yep. I had them too.
Yeah. I miss tapes. I miss the analog sound, analog tapes. That was the word I was looking for. But I think we were just much more, I was ADD back then, but I was so present. I was so much more present then than I am now. And now there are just so many different ways to agitate the ADD. I mean, you jump on Facebook and you jump on social media and all of a sudden you've got, I have trouble watching 30 seconds of a YouTube video anymore. Right. And so what I'm curious about though, is that just like a disturbance in brain? Is ADD a disturbance or an imbalance in the waves that are happening inside of the brain? Or am I conceptualizing this wrong? Or could you just create a little awareness around that?
I like where you're going with that. Let's just stick with traditional ADD, which is too much theta and not enough beta. There was a research done by Lubar and a few other people way back in the Stone Age days of neurofeedback. And they had said that, you know, anything over 2 to 1 is not healthy, meaning you have 2 times as much theta, inward thought, creative focus, and daydreaming, as you have one part of getting everything done. And I would agree with that. I think they've changed the ratio a little bit. Other people have said certain things, but there are other ways, as Amon's found, to have ADD or ADD-like symptoms. And the biggest thing that we see in our office, if I miss your question or don't fully answer it, you know, stop me. But
no, we're good.
There's something that I've noticed a lot of, and that is that people come into my office diagnosed by medical doctors with ADHD, and it turns out they're anxious. Now, if you're walking down Main Street with your wagon and you're looking at everything left and right, you don't care anymore. You have to be going at the right speed to take things in, be done with it, look at the next thing. If you're walking by the hardware store, you know, for the next 5-10 minutes pulling this wagon, you're not going to focus on it anymore because, oh, it's there. It's nothing new. I'm not taking anything in. If you're driving down in your, you know, race car doing 200 miles an hour, everything's a blur.
Right.
Both people aren't focusing. And that's what we see is kids that come in, adults that come in, older people that come in. You can have the brain turned on so fast that you're in that fight or flight stress mode and you're not able to back up and process what's there. But when you go to the doctor and you say, oh, I'm a little bit irritable, I'm having trouble focusing, you know, they start reading this stuff, or the teachers that say, oh, this kid's ADD, go to the doctor and get this. It's not the doctor's fault because they're not looking. I think it's the medical community that needs to adjust the style of education to include more conversations about brain health and not have it be a scary tool that people don't know what it is. And that's kind of where it, I mean, some places of the country, out by you, I've got a lot of colleagues and a best friend out that way. And he has no problem saying the word QEEG or EEG. In the Midwest, it's a little harder. Right. Sometimes they're just not even open to it.
So what then, if it's a brainwave imbalance, or if I'm moving like a race car, right, and I'm not taking in, or there's too much theta and not enough beta, the default, you know, if we just kind of overview the conversation or trivialize it a little bit, so the default would just be, give me some Adderall or give me some Ritalin, and that's going to bring the theta down or bring the beta and theta into a more of a balance, or is that just like a fix or a cure, or a fix rather?
I believe what the assumption is, and I don't know if there's anyone that's ever tested the chemical happening in real time in the brain, but it's supposed to speed up the brain to get the brain to fire a little bit quicker. Just kind of like I guess the opposite would be if you take a painkiller, some people get really foggy from them. You know, it's in the opposite. So, but there are people who are anxious and have taken stimulants and it calms them down.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those things where you look at people that smoke and drink and they get different effects out of it. So, but yes, that's the goal, is to try and regulate that, where if you learn how to naturally regulate that, now you're not stuck on a pill.
Yeah. So share about the natural regulation then.
Well, there are a few main things, at least that I've found in my journey. One of them is neurofeedback, which is something that started a long time ago. I wasn't around back then, but what I've read is they got a little bit into alternate states of consciousness and may have lost a little credibility. I'm not sure. I'm just kind of summarizing it. And it really didn't have a good rap for a while. And now it's coming back around. And there are people in the field right now that are doing some things that are new, that haven't really been proven yet. Some people doing more tried and true things. Sometimes the field is called the Wild West because there's not a lot of regulation on it. But there are people that are very dedicated to it, trying to, you know, change that. So there are some, you can't just say, I'm getting neurofeedback here and you're getting neurofeedback there. It may be a totally different tool.
Right.
Some people don't brain map. They guess, put the leads wherever they want. Other people actually do maps and look where the lead should go. So it's that's the part where it's a little bit of a Wild West. And that's part of my passion of, unfortunately, being that hallroom monitor, the neurofeedback police, is I've seen so many people get taken in my area and spend thousands and thousands of dollars where they didn't even have the leads in the right spot. And I just don't want to see more people get taken. I don't care if they come to my center or not, but I want the education to be out there so people know what's out there.
So if I come to your center and I say I'm having problems focusing, and I've always had problems focusing, and there are associated problems sleeping that come as a result of not being able to focus, what's the process look like?
The process by us, we would start off and have a chit chat like this, very casual. I like to be at the same level. I don't believe in sitting up here looking down on someone saying they have the problem and we all have our things. I think it makes it a very understanding an environment. Sometimes I share my own story of bouncing my head off ski hills and car accidents and stairs the last couple of years. So I struggle just as much. The only thing perfect about me is the crease on the shirt, and it's the dry cleaners. It's not me. So there's nothing perfect. Some people really need to have their hand held and know that it's not that, oh, this person thinks I have something wrong. Because, you know, labels are great on shirts, but they're not so great for people because they don't fix anything. And they tell you kind of a general idea what something might be, but then it comes back to what we talked about a few minutes ago. What good is a label if it hasn't been diagnosed properly? And when these kids come in on Adderall or, you know, are put on things that really aren't working so high, even some supplements, I'm a fan of supplements, but you got to be on the right ones. I took a fish oil one time and it made me manic. I had to stop taking it. It was a natural, one of the best ones, and it just didn't work for me. I went on a different one. I was great. So once you come in, we would do an EEG on you, which is a 19-channel brain map. It is a medical device that you can use in the clinical setting, and we record 19 channels of what your brain is doing. So there's a few on the front, a few in the middle, some on the side, some in the back, some on the top. And from that, I work with a gentleman out in California who reads all those, and he and I will come up with an analysis of where we should train and what devices or treatments or training methods would work best for you. So we don't believe that, you know, we're a hammer, you have to be a nail. You know, there might be a chance that you don't even do neurofeedback. And there are some people that are a little bit more, oh gosh, I don't know what the right word is. They just want to get everybody they can in with a pulse. And I never went that way. I was blessed to have a wife and still have a wife that is in corporate America. So I don't have to worry as much about making this huge profit to feed my family. Right. As much as doing the right thing. So there are people that we turn away or people we tell, this may not be the right route for you, given that you don't want to get off the alcohol and you don't want to put down the weed and you don't want to make those changes. Once we get past the QEG, we do something that's also called the biofeedback or psychophysiological assessment. And that is basically a stress response test. I don't want to call it a stress test because we don't have a treadmill in here we're going to make you run on. Instead, we hook you up. We ask you to sit calmly. We ask you to think of a stressor. We ask you to try and relax from that stressor. And then we teach you how to breathe properly. And we look at all those different stages. And then we record a baseline after you're done. Did you remember what we just taught you, or did you go back to your old pattern? And that's really a powerful tool that we can show on a big screen TV in our office, because now people can put their physiology to the test and say, boy, I didn't know I was like that. Or they come in, you know, the I'm not angry, but someone's yelling the words. Well, you get a mixed message. There's no more mixed messages, because it isn't my view as a therapist saying, well, I think you have a trauma experience, or I think that you're bipolar, or I think you're depressed. I'm basing it on your symptoms. Now we're basing it on objective measurements that can't lie, unless you hook up somebody else and tell them that that's you. But, you know, that's not even a question of something we would do, especially when you can see you were hooked up and we hit the button and you see, oh, that's got to be me. There's no way you could have pulled that up. So we try to walk through it very slow. We take our time. We don't try and push this into an hour. Usually it's about a 2-hour assessment. And then from there, we talk about the different options. One of them would be neurofeedback. Biofeedback is one of the things that we do as well. The heart rate variability training we've just touched on before a little bit, trying to get the nervous system balanced. And there's also something called audiovisual entrainment, which is a device that blinks lights and beeps tones at certain frequencies. And it creates what's called a frequency following response in the brain. And the brain, in a sense, starts making that frequency. So you can teach your brain to kind of turn a corner without doing all the work of neurofeedback. The downside is we don't know yet if it wears off because people have to do it a lot more. Some people say they do it for a month and they feel great. Some people do it for a very long time. And it all depends on how much you challenge yourself too. I push myself a little too hard and I use it every day because it helps me sleep better and it helps me stay focused and calm. But if I didn't push so hard, would I need it every day? I don't know.
And so you mentioned training. So is this a particular regimen then that you put yourself on of treatment?
Yeah, I wasn't doing it for many years. I met the gentleman who owns this company in Canada, Dave Seaver, the company's Mind Alive. And I knew about him for 11 years now, but I went to a recent conference in Denver and I kind of got back into it. And I have a little sleep monitor next to my bed that connects to my phone and it tells me when I'm in deep sleep or REM sleep or light. And my sleep was always down in the 50s and 60s. I started using it in the first night. It was over 80 to 90. Hmm. Oh, I mean, and then if I don't use it or I'm out of town or I'm talking or I'm doing whatever, I can't get that 90% unless I use it.
Well, it's what I hear, man, is that you are bridging the gap between the mystical and the medical. And what I mean by that, I mentioned this is actually the second interview that Kyle and I did. I scrapped the first one. I practice Kundalini yoga, and Kundalini yoga is based in a lot of breathing techniques, synchronized with mantras, which is the intentional repetition of sound, and then kriyas, which are specific moves designed to create specific outcomes. And it's very mystical. There's no measurements going on. But when I do practice Kundalini yoga, there are very profound shifts that happen in my life, but there are no measurements associated with them. And what I hear with you, and then, you know, to exaggerate a little bit to prove the point, the medical community is like, what are your symptoms? Here's a pill. And what I hear is that you have a very practical application that exists kind of in the middle of those two.
Well, the nice thing about the biofeedback equipment is that you can measure your heart rate, your respiration rate, the amount of sweat on your skin, and your hand temperature, which are all signs of your autonomic nervous system being overdriven or balanced. So my dissertation that I'm writing up as we speak is actually on this topic of, can audiovisual entrainment make that much of a change in one session? You know, a lot of times there's studies and you don't know if they did 20 sessions and that's why they had such a great result. I personally know from doing one session of audiovisual and pulling the dust, you know, shaking the dust off this thing from the closet, my sleep improved the first night. Right. Was it placebo? I don't know.
Well, see, that's fascinating because there's a specific kriya that I use for sleep. And what you're doing is you're closing your eyes 1/10, which is the visual. You're focusing on the tip of the nose, visual, right? Then you're inhaling at a specific, with a specific rhythm, and then you're reciting a mantra. So you've got breathing, you've got audio, and you've got visual, right? And then when you do that for 15 minutes, you sleep like a baby, and it's fascinating. And so again, it's like what you're doing is you're discovering the measure, like this is just what I'm present to, is you're discovering the measurement-based, for lack of a better word, medical style application of things that have existed in the woo-woo dimensions.
Yes, it is bridging it for sure. And I, you know, some of the stuff we can't, I would love to see a study that proves negative ions. I would love to see something like that because I have a bed at home that has crystals on and it's infrared. And I don't know why it works. All I know is that I have less pain when I use it. So if it's a placebo or not, I don't care. If they say that the negative ions come off the ocean, we all feel better by the ocean.
Right.
How do you deny these things? I'm not saying that we should live in and pay for placebos. Obviously, we should ethically know what we're getting in life. But we're really after being happier, healthier, and more productive. And if something does that, I don't know. I guess I have to look at the fact that if I don't use that audiovisual device, I don't feel better. So it's more like a treatment because you're not learning anything. Neurofeedback and biofeedback, you learn how to regulate your nervous system and your brain. And you may not have to stay on it the rest of your life, which I love about it. It's not a chiropractic model where you're kind of, you have to keep up with it forever or you might go backwards.
And there's nothing you're ingesting here, right?
Correct.
There's nothing that goes into your body.
No, you should drink a lot of water before you use it. That's about it.
For sure.
But not the water they sell, just water.
Nice. There was something else I wanted to ask. It's slipping from my attention. It will come back. So what then, what's your relationship to self in all of this? Because what I'm, it's interesting, man, because what I'm present to, it's interesting because the more I speak with you, the more I discover about what it is you've discovered, the more power I am present to, or the more amazingness I'm present to in the work that you're up to. Like, this is revolutionary stuff, isn't it?
I feel blessed that I've kind of in the right place at the right time, because there are people like Dr. Phil who have the mental health angle covered.
Right.
And people like Daniel Amen who have the brain science covered, but there hasn't been anybody yet that's trying to pull these things together. And there's been a lot of resistance, and even people in my own field that haven't congratulated me or even said, hey, this is great, when I'm helping get them more work. So It hasn't been a very easy journey, but there's something in me saying it's really helped in my life and in family and friends' lives. And of the people that I wasn't able to help, if I had all this knowledge now, could I go back and help some of those people? And to see people that come in and have tried med after med and not had the right solution, or the people who are afraid to try a med, they come in and have a brain map done, have their data sent off to a place called CNS Response, and I believe they're able to help you select which med would be best for you. So if doctors are open to not calling every shot and having a collaboration, We all could win.
Right.
I'm not saying we should avoid medicine. We just need to work with them.
Yeah, so we don't even necessarily need to rule. We're not making medicine or pills necessarily wrong. We're just adding another stop and or a few stops into the flow chart.
Exactly. And just, I'm just kind of, I would really like to play in their sandbox is a nice way to word it. You know, right. I know how to run the same tool as them. I read it a little differently than them. But doctors are a little bit more open to the heart rate variability because it's more science.
Carry on.
And the neurofeedback, because there's so many different models out there, I can understand why they're a little bit more reluctant to buy into it. Same with the mapping, which we can talk more about, the different types of brain mapping if we have time. That's a really big problem for doctors to say, well, you're doing a full medical grade EEG, and the guy down the street from you is gluing two channels together to two channels together to two channels together and calling it a brain map. And then there's people who use databases, which are controversial because of the way that they connect the wires together. And you get a different signal if you connect the wires in a different order. So I can understand why they're not doing that. I would just think with their training that they would say, okay, prove to me. I'm going to give you 5 minutes like a drug rep, right? Prove to me why I should listen to you. That's all we're asking in our field.
So what frustrates you? Like, if you were to just get real and authentic and raw for a minute, like, what about this pisses you off?
What's really sad is I told you last time, and I'll share the same story. I had an opportunity to have dinner with one of the top sleep docs in our area. And he was the brother-in-law to a friend of mine. So our family was invited to her house, and he happened to be there. And I thought, this is great, because a few of my clients have went to him. So I told him who I was, and he acted pretty professional and not, you know, he didn't poo-poo anything. And I said, okay, well, so-and-so is going to be handing you a document from us, and I'd really like you to just look at it. I want you to make the final call, of course, but I think this could really help you understand what you're up against, what she has that she may not be telling you, because some of it is trauma, some of it is anxiety. And he took the report from this lady, and he threw it in the trash in front of her. Now, he could have taken it to his little office and thrown it out and kept that change for her to think that we were all going to work together. But he made it very clear that he was in control as the MD, and no little clinician using a medical tool was going to tell him what to do.
Right.
And that was really sad, especially knowing that I was good friends with his sister-in-law. Maybe he doesn't like his sister-in-law. Who knows? She's a great lady though. So that was really difficult for me to see that it just hasn't changed yet. And a lot of my colleagues all over the coasts are having extreme luck. They're just, you know, printing money, printing the ability to just get this out there with multiple clinics and that. And I'm just trying to get more people in our area to see that it's possible.
Yeah.
And it's just sad that there aren't enough people.
It's really unfortunate. I mean, it's really sad. It's I don't even know how to describe that. I mean, the side of me that wants to go off, that's kind of keeping myself reserved, you know, in service of you and who might be listening, you know, has some things that it wants to say and some things it wants to express. But it's interesting. I just interviewed a woman right before you, who is a cancer survivor. She had a brain tumor, and she discovered THC and CBD. And, you know, she's talking about in the interview how she had to get really used to being very high. But the effect that the combination of those two non-traditional substances had on her healing was like beyond profound. You know, and we got into a conversation about what we in coaching we refer to as context. And context being it's basically a context is a pair of glasses that someone wears that shades an entire experience of life. And the medical community comes from a different they come from a context. And, you know, she said that she's met doctors who, you know, in her struggle with cancer, she met doctors who truly believe that they're God, you know, that they're gods. And they're certainly not all like that, you know, but she has doctors that she loves, but she didn't find one on the first try or the second try or the third try. You know, it took her several tries to find the one who she could have an authentic conversation with about what was really going on.
And some are open to the oils and some aren't. You know, in our state, I don't think it's totally legal. Right. You can buy it here, but I know you can't fly in and out with it because I called TSA. I have chronic pain myself from many accidents. And I did try the CBD non-THC oil for all you cops listening. I don't
exactly.
Nobody's
getting high.
Yeah. And I never got to that level because I'm such a lightweight and I don't need a lot to get me to a better place. But it was amazing when in 20 or 30 seconds, you can feel everything shift and move. And suddenly you may not be numb in a leg and an arm. And suddenly you can pick your kid up and give her a hug when you couldn't before. There's so much about pain that I don't think people realize. And I didn't. I grew up in a very healthy family and I married into a family. My father-in-law's had 19 surgeries. His back is half fused. He's like Robo Man. And to see how much pain he's in, I still don't get it because I'm not him. But since my last couple accidents, I have some things that really stop me from living life. And now I'm getting like 1/10 of what he's probably going through. And the people that have a lot of pain, they say, well, I'm not depressed. I'm not anxious. That's garbage. Of course you are. You just don't know it. How would you not be? You can't live your life. You can't do certain things. And then that leads to more anxiety and stress.
Right.
So a lot of these pain management docs are calling people out on it. And they say people get violently angry because they are just in complete denial that they have that anxiety because no one wants to get labeled with a mental health thing.
Right.
When you can't do what everybody else does and you have pain all the time, how could you say you're not stressed? I don't get that.
Right.
No, and I'm not saying that. I mean, I know I have stress. I'm willing to admit it, but I'm also looking very hard at every tool out there that I can try and validate it in my little mad scientist lab and say, does this really work? And I know the oils work because my brain changed from them for the worse, unfortunately. Some people it helps. I used 2 drops a day for several months and I got to the point where I didn't want to drive because I didn't feel like I could. Mm. So I had to back off.
And that's just from CBD?
Just plain CBD. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was blended for me. It wasn't a store-bought one.
Right.
And I tried a different one and it made me so crazy anxious. And all it was a different tincture, I guess, in it. You know, it was the same carrier, you know, the same MTC oil, and it had the CBD powder, but they put a different tincture in it. And I mean, I couldn't handle it. So, I mean, I've had some trauma clients up here that we've tried to get them CBD oil and they've had horrible experiences. Other people have great experience. So again, like everything, you know, Adderall works for some, not for others. You know, Concerta works for some, not for others. You know, that Zoloft works for some, not others. So you can't say a pill's always wrong. You got to look at what you're up against in your neurology and biology and try and make the best call.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in regards to the whole, you know, the whole pot thing, it's just talk about the Wild West. I mean, that entire industry is still, it's just a bunch of hippies growing pot that managed to score some big deals once it went legal, if they were lucky, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, I think that there's so much potential. I think that there's a lot of potential when the right eyes with the right agendas get on the right molecular structures of some of these things. But unfortunately, the way industries are very put together with the profit, you know, that's talk about a profit driven industry. If there ever was one, you know, it's that industry. So yeah. I really do think that I see a lot of people out here though, you know, it's legal. It's just not even, there's not any sort of stigma attached, to, and I see it having a lot of very profound effects on the lives of people.
Yeah.
So why don't we, so you said you wanted to get to the brain mapping if we have time. So why don't you share, you know, specifically about what's going on there and whatever it is that you would like whoever's listening to learn about what your contribution is here or what's going on specifically, rather.
Again, coming from a hall monitor standpoint, there are different levels of brain maps. And there are some people that are charging $1,200 for pieced together duct taped maps. And there are people that are charging $300 for full QEGs on the best system on the planet. So, I mean, there's a huge extreme between. If you go to a medical doctor, they will record the same EEG that we will. And if you have a medical doctor look at it and it goes through insurance, it's suddenly thousands of dollars because everyone has to get their thing. Some people read their EEGs in-house. I used to do that myself. I tried to be a jack of all trades. And I decided about 2 years ago to work exclusively with a gentleman. And then when he's retiring now, I'm working with a new guy. But making sure that there's someone that has 20, 30 years on me of experience, why would I want to read it? Why would I want to make a call when someone's had that much more time on their plate doing this and they can be the expert? So that was a big change for me. But as far as the EEGs, imagine recording 20 minutes of data, 10 minutes with your eyes open, 10 minutes with your eyes closed. That's what you have to do if you would have a EEG go to court. I mean, that's a medically gold standard EEG is 20 minutes of data. Sometimes people do 6 or 7 minutes of eyes open and then the rest done with eyes closed. But you're recording, let's just say 10 and 10, because then that's easy to do. If you have a system that records two channels and you have to record 10 minutes of data, you're going to be at that sucker for a long time. And there's no way that the brain's going to be in the same state. I mean, the brain can change a state in an instant. But when you look at the eyes closed from some of the advanced training that I've had with Jay Gunkelman, he had taught me that the brain may make a change in different levels of sleep, meaning that you go into stage one or stage two. And if you're recording only 2 minutes at a time, then going to another section and recording 2 minutes at a time and 2 minutes at a time, that's the only way they can get their 10-minute run, is that they have to break it up. So now you're getting a fifth of the data, or you're recording five times longer. So whichever way you slice it, there's no way that you can get the same quality of data on these less expensive machines that you do on a full QEEG. And what's hard for me is that, you know, these mini systems came out after the full systems were made. It's not like somebody said, let's make a 2-channel, and someone said, oh, I'm going to make a 19-channel. It's like the field went backwards, in my opinion. That's just my observation and opinion. It can get eaten alive for saying that. But when you have something more superior, why would you go to something that isn't? And I'm working with a doctor right now out on the coast. He wants me to help develop his program, but he doesn't want to use MAPS. He doesn't want a brain map. He wants to go off symptoms. I'm sorry. I cannot subscribe to that. I don't need the money that much. I'd love to have it, put the kids through school, right? But that is not something I'm willing to sell my soul on, because I've seen the value of the EEGs.
And so personal question, share with me your personal integrity. Like what's your integrity mean in all of this?
Well, I've turned down a lot of jobs and positions and opportunities because I have to stay true to what matters to me. Matters to me is if there's a gold standard, you use it. You don't shortcut something to make a buck. And there are a lot of people doing that because they have really good marketing, or they have really good hype, or they're really good at selling. And all I want to do is sell myself. I don't want to sell a tool. I want people to trust me and know that I'm using the right tool based on the credentials I have and the people that I've worked with. And I was on the other side. I was using a tool that was not very well validated, and I didn't know any better. And I had like a 50% success rate with clients. And you'd say, oh, well, Kyle, you're just not the expert. The expert, the one of the people that founded the field, was making all of the protocols. All I was doing is pushing the button. I was a glorified autopilot monkey. And there's no way that the sessions could have worked, because now when you look back at it, that what we were trying to do may not have been possible, coming back to databases and the way that the channels are all connected. So the Europeans have proven something that it's called linked ears, and they're saying it's not as effective as we all think it was. This database is tied to linked ears, and so is the neurofeedback training. So if you logically just go backwards, you see that it may work for some and it doesn't for others. Personally, I know I chased the wrong spot for over 7 years that said it was on the top of my head, and the software was creating it there. When I looked in a different database, or actually without a database, just the raw, I realized it was in the back here behind my ear. And so how can you have the same piece of data, hook the wires up differently in the computer, and get a different signal?
So what does this suggest about the nature of you?
Nature of me?
Yeah.
I don't have a filter, and I'm the hall monitor. And I have a really hard time letting things go through that aren't true.
Right.
And it could be the death of me, but it could also be my success in that I don't shortcut. And if it takes a little longer to get somewhere, I'm willing to take that time.
Yeah, there's a whole big, I want to jump into a great big coaching session with you right now based on all that I'm noticing, but there's a whole heck of a lot. And I really want to acknowledge you for your commitment to personal integrity, to the extent that I can see it hurts a little bit. I can see the frustration, and I understand. I really see you as almost like a radical pioneer in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think that's I think radical is a good word.
Yeah. And what's the burden of being a radical pioneer?
You don't get a lot of Christmas cards.
Yeah. Right. Do you deserve a Christmas card?
I don't know. I guess I'd have to ask my clients that. You know, I feel like I've had a lot of interesting cases, even using neurofeedback in a Parkinson's case, which is not at all efficacious for. But when you just take away the label and you look at somebody's brain pattern, and you know neurofeedback can help that brain pattern, and you minimize somebody's concerns.
Well, what happened there? Share the outcome if you can. I mean, is that
I sure can. I had a gentleman who was a little older, in his 70s, actually very old, and he had Parkinson's, and you know, Parkinson's, they have the shake and the tremor. And what we noticed in the EEG, when I had worked with Jay Gunkelman on this case, who's one of the people on this planet that knows EEG really, really well. And he had said, let's look at this as a 5.8 hertz imbalance and train it with neurofeedback. Who cares if it's, I'm paraphrasing now, who cares if it's really not ADD or not Parkinson's? It's the fact that it's there. And if we can get that down and it's in the motor cortex, maybe it will change. We also taught him how to relax and tense and relax his hand that he was having those tremors in to try and regain control. He never needed a stimulator. We saw objective change on the EEG from the first map to the second, to the third, to the fourth. And I don't think we stopped it, or I should say we didn't take it away. We didn't make it better, but I believe that we halted it to a point where he unfortunately passed away last November, but it was from a fall with his balance.
Right. And what I hear is that you're onto something that is essentially the work of miracles. Like it's kind of like if you had the backing in the research development team, you know, that some people that have a lot, you know, huge amounts of money have access to, there's a way that you could take this technology that you're discovering and really harness it to create miraculous shifts in the lives of people by addressing their brain.
Well, and you know, when you have a field that's trying to get off the ground, that's had some ups and downs, and then you go rogue like I did and do this, the only reason I did it is I had somebody's blessing that was very prominent in our field. And I knew that if we were staying within that scope of practice and trying to help him work with this, we weren't treating the Parkinson's. We were treating the brain. So if you take the label away, it's just something in the back right. of your shirt that says a size usually. The shirt is still the shirt. And that's right. what we worked with. And I was shocked. I knew this was my fate because I had presented this to my doctoral group and they all looked at me like I was nuts. And nobody was like, wow, this is amazing. They're all like, what are you doing, Kyle? You're weird. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just the black sheep, I guess. But there have been other black sheeps too that have made some change. I think Daniel Amen's referred to himself, I think his father called him a maverick or something like that, which isn't always the best thing.
Well, I mean, the most black sheeps are often the people that create, black sheep are often the people that, you know, create some of the most amazing changes that, you know, you could argue Jesus was a black sheep. You could argue Gandhi was a black sheep.
Sure.
Right. You could argue that heresy is the thing that leads to, you know, transformational shifts in planet Earth. And I really, I actually have to start wrapping up here, but I really want to acknowledge you for heeding the call, man.
Thanks.
You know, and any parting thoughts, any wisdom that you would like to leave anyone who's listening with, and then also, of course, how can people get in touch with you?
Sure.
Find out more.
Well, you know, the only 2 cents that I would add in is, and it's my own thought, is I don't think that we can always think our way out of it. I think that you can have somebody put a weapon to your head, and no matter how good you are at meditation or yoga, there's still a weapon at your head. And your inner body is still going to ring that fire, that fight or flight bell. And you're going to go into that. But there's also times where it is irrational. And there are things where you're not being attacked. You're not in war. You're not being hurt. Or you're not witnessing something. It's past, and you still hang on to that because it's just heavily rooted in there. So the power of the mind is very powerful. But I'm concerned that we can't sometimes get to the power of the mind because we turn part of it off. When we go into fight or flight, our brain makes changes. You know, we don't need to be able to be empathetic. We don't need to know how to control our political correctness. We need to survive. We need to be impulsive. We need to be that, but not in the real world. So if you trigger stress when you shouldn't trigger it, you're going to be taking away all those important things we need. And then we wonder why we make bad decisions. So the best thing that I've heard is from Einstein, and that is that problems cannot be solved with the mindset that created them. It's in every talk I give. It's in every book I do. It's on every web page. It's like broken record time for that, because to me, that is the foundation of my whole center, is that you have a problem. You can't solve it with your current mindset. You need new tools, new training, new insights, new awareness, new knowledge, whatever it might be, to understand what caused your problem. One of my mentors always tells me, Kyle, quit talking about the problem in this hour we have together. Focus on the solution. And the solution is getting deeper than just the root problem. You know, we have to get to the root of the problem, not the symptoms of what we think we have. So just know that the field of psychophysiology is something that's going to be growing. There are a lot of talented people getting into it. There's only one school right now, one doctoral program in the whole world. It's in San Francisco at Saybrook University as we record this right now in 2019. And it's a group of unbelievable and talented people that are trying to have more of us go through the program and learn this. So it's, you may look it up and see 1 or 2 pages on it, unlike other things. But I remember hearing stories about chiropractics and the pluses and minuses 20, 30 years ago. And now look at it. There's one in every corner, whether you like them or not. They've grown. They've got a stronghold, and they've helped a lot of people. They took my headaches away. So I'm not saying good or bad about any of it. I just know that our field needs to have that. And I'm hopefully going to be able to make that happen at a grandiose scale of at least getting people to it. You don't have to visit my center in the Midwest. You can go to somebody else that's doing things right, keywords, not just anyone that's doing neuro or biofeedback, but someone that's doing everything the right way. And you're going to get a very similar experience, maybe not as many soapboxes of mine. Some people are more reserved in our field, but no one said I don't have passion. And I think that passion carries through. Passion develops rapport with people. It works trust. When you really know where somebody is and they're not bluffing you and they don't play cards well, I think that's very important.
Yeah.
You know? So anyone can find me at kyleferoli.com with the Y. Kyle, there are Ferolis with the I. We're the Ys. And also mindbrainbalance.com is our main center site in the Midwest.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks again so much for, thanks for making time for a second call.
I'm glad we could. We definitely went in a little more depth.
We did. I was rusty from interviewing on that first call. It was my first interview in a while. So thanks for coming out and connecting. And what would you like to be acknowledged for?
Trying to make a difference, trying to make people healthier, and coming up with something that you may not know about, you know, look into it at least.
Yeah.
It would be an honor to have people just take this and say, you know what, I'm going to go look it up at least and see if it's something that might be able to help you.
Yeah, man.
That would be great.
Yeah. Well, there's this really cool quote. They used to say this about the Grateful Dead. They're not the best at what they do. They're the only ones who do what they do. Right. And what I appreciate about you is that you're really kind of like one of the only ones who does what you do. And I really want to just acknowledge, yeah, your authenticity and your commitment, man. Like you have a commitment and you are making choices from your commitment. You are having your commitment make the decisions for you versus your circumstances, and your integrity making decisions for you versus your circumstances or the lure and the seduction of the money or the whatever. And it just speaks volumes about who you are as a human being and your commitment to other human beings. And so thank you for the amazing work that you were doing on this planet. I want you to know that what did I ask you? Do you deserve a present? Do you deserve a birthday cake? What was it?
Oh, I can't remember.
I asked you if you deserve something and you were like, I don't know. You deserve it. You deserve recognition.
I hope that I deserve the chance to share the message. That's what I hope.
Yeah. And I'm here to acknowledge you and to let you know that you do deserve it because your integrity speaks for itself. So thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure again. And thanks guys for tuning in to another edition of The Talk. We will talk with you next time. Bye-bye.
Before the ayahuasca, before the clear blue skies, and before the great awakening, there were demons disguised as angels in shiny foily packets containing China heroin. The cheapest vodka bottles, the filthy escapades, my morning hustle on the train. And the angels watching over me, the God that I could never see as I wandered alone through city streets. And the whores, the whores. Till I cast aside my demons and that's when it came shining through dusty blinds in a dim lit room and I saw the light, I saw the light, I saw the light, I saw the light. It was that sweet, 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 the sweetest of surrenders, sweet, 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 the sweetest of surrenders, sweet, 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 the sweetest of surrenders. Get it any way you can, get it any way you can. And I don't need no motherfucking Bible to show me the errors of my ways, but may God bless you if you keep one by your bed.